the EFL? It's the Football League podcast that's better late than never. Coming up, Nutella wants a taste of Germany, 99 EFL goals this weekend, sprinkles and sauce optional, Black Cat saves wet dog, and sacking season begins as Charlton decide they can no longer be holden to Dean. This is What the EFL. Yeah, we're a day later than usual. We just wanted a little bit of a bank holiday relax, to be perfectly honest with you. Apologies for being 24 hours later than we would normally be, but we're here to talk everything EFL. It's me, Matt Davis-Adams. I'm joined by my two regulars. Hello, Adrian Clark.
Hello, how are you?
All right, thanks. Yeah, not too bad. Sam Parkin's back with us too. You okay, Sam?
Good, Matt. Good to see you both.
Likewise, we are going to get into some news shortly, but before we do, how about this offer from our friends at Quinbet? They've enhanced their UK welcome offer. You can now get a free bet worth up to £35. It is for new customers that sign up only. Check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions or use the link provided in this pod. It's 18 plus, and remember, always gamble responsibly. Okay, for the first time this season, we're going to start with a news section. And the reason that we are starting with news is because we've had our first sacking of the season. Charlton, the first club to part company with the manager this term, Dean Holden, leaves the Valley after 9 months in charge. It's about 9 months and a week since he was on this show. Saturday's defeat against Oxford, the Addicts, fifth in a row in all competitions. Adrian, always reluctant with Charlton to put too much blame on the actual departing manager in recent years, because it's a bit of a basket case of a club. How much of the blame here is apportioned to the higher-ups, and how much to Holden, do you think?
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think that he could have been given a little bit more time. It's not long ago that he signed a new long-term contract. So it's been a costly decision on Charlton's part to make the change. I feel they've been a little bit unlucky. I think they've conceded three late winning goals, which obviously puts a very, very different slant on things. You look at the numbers, they're creating loads of chances, lots of shots in open play. They're creating high turnovers for fun more than anyone else in League One. But the issue, and it's a long-standing issue, is that they've got a soft underbelly, Charlton. They are not good at game management. They're not good at keeping other teams at bay. And I think we saw against Oxford at the weekend that, you know, that they just strode through the middle of the pitch to score goals. So yeah, I think that has been the undoing. It's too many goals against. Also, by the way, I think he's been given a squad, or maybe it was his choice, I'm not sure, but he's got a very, very young squad. Very young, too many young players in defensive positions, and we saw him make some dramatic changes at the weekend. Two of his back three were teenagers; they came off early. Yeah, it was quite brutal for them. So yeah, look, it's a cocktail of things, but I don't think it helps any Charlton manager, the fact that upstairs seems to be a little bit unstable.
Right, soft underbelly, then, Sam. Just looking at the favourites to take over, all of a sudden it's Lee Johnson. If you're a team with a soft underbelly, are you going to appoint a manager who got beat 5-0 last week and has lost, what, every league game this season, just looking at Hibs' record? Or are you thinking Carl Robinson, also in contention for a return? Mark Bonner's up there as well. Any other names that stand out to you?
I haven't got a clue, Matt, to be honest with the club. I mean, Clarkie's, I think, listed a number of the issues of the last few weeks under Dean Holden. I don't think he's probably covered himself fully in glory in terms of the game management. But yeah, the issues are far wider and far bigger than who's the manager at Charlton. And let's not forget that. I think this new board, this new hierarchy, they were essentially in position in the winter when Dean Holden was given this contract. So what chance have you got? I think, you know, Thomas Sangard was still in position. So officially it was him, but these people that are in charge now were at the club. So they've had the conversation, surely, with appointing Dean Holden. He's been given five games. So it just doesn't add up to me. Should have been given longer. So I think it's a little bit of that and a little bit of his, obviously, decisions in the last few weeks. But I think there's a number of high earners that they're trying to ship out. So whether the purse strings are quite tight, they can't add. I thought in the summer I was quite infused when Kamara and Alfie May came in for two, but there needs to be more. Needed to build on that and add a little bit more quality for Dean to work with. So I don't know where they go from here. I mean, who realistically wants to take that job on? It's easy to throw this out there, but I genuinely do feel for the fans, because I go there quite regularly over the last few years. Johnny Jackson should have been given more time. Ben Garner should have been given more time. Now Dean Holden should have been given more time. And off the field, it's just been a continual mess over the last decade, I would say. So, yeah, they need a plan, need it quickly, need people singing from the same hymn sheet, and hopefully there's better times around the corner, because it's just another shambolic start to the season.
Yeah, fine margins too. Every defeat for them has just been by a single goal. They host Fleetwood in their next game on Saturday. Transfer-wise, the one that's really stood out to us, Southampton, we know they've been busy trimming their squad since relegation from the Premier League. Nathan Teller, the latest to depart, he's gone to Bayer Leverkusen for a reported £20 million. Southampton said, although we're disappointed to lose such a talented homegrown player and popular character, the club felt the offer represented fair value. Bittersweet, this one, for Saints fans, Sam, I guess, because, you know, they saw him excel on loan at Burnley last season and thought, oh, we'll have a bit of that. And they did for a couple of games, and now he's gone.
Yeah, no, he's really good, wasn't he? The opening few games obviously continued where he left off at Burnley. So, yeah, it's a real shame for the fans. They're well stocked in that area, and they've obviously moved in the market, bringing in Ryan Fraser already. Some really talented young players. Amiyo, I hope I've not butchered that again. He got his first start at the weekend, and my goodness, at Plymouth, when he came on for about 10 minutes, he had a huge effect on the game. So they've got some really exciting young wide players that are probably going to get more game time off the back of this, but probably just too tempting, too good an opportunity for the player to turn down after what he did last year. So you can understand it, because another year in the Championship probably wasn't what he necessarily needed for his development and the stage of the career he's at.
Made some good money, haven't they, Clarky? Southampton, you know, Lavia, Livramento, Ward-Prowse, Salisu, all going for big money. Now Teller too. It's going to be interesting to see what they do in this last week of the market, whether they're trying to spend some of that or whether they think it's more prudent to keep it and they've got enough to get them straight back up.
Well, I think they should spend it. I do, because you look at the strength of Leicester at the start of this season. They're flying, aren't they? You can see the identity is really developing there. They might be hard to shift from the top two. We saw Leeds look much better at the weekend. We're going to get to that shortly with Nonto and Sinisterra and Pirou giving them a lot more punch. So Southampton, they can't fall behind, can they? They've got to be aiming for top two. And, you know, there are other contenders as well, of course. So no, I think they should spend a fair chunk of that if they can. If Che Adams leaves as well, which feels likely given that he sat out at the weekend, then I think they would definitely need another front player. Can't just rely on Adam Armstrong for the bulk of the goals. So, yeah, I expect them to be really, really active. And I'm looking forward to seeing them over the course of the season, because we all rate Russell Martin. He's now got to have the players to fit his football. And it's for him, it's probably quite exciting as well. He's lost players that you know, they were a little bit confused over what was going to happen. And now he can go out and cherry pick players that probably he hasn't been able to get in the past, because he hasn't worked for clubs that have been rich enough. So he can go out and get real talent that he thinks he can mould into better players. So I would imagine he's rubbing his hands right now thinking, give me some of that cash.
Sad day for Saints fans. Sad day for me too, because it's only this weekend I learned that Nathan Teller's nickname was Nutella, and I feel like we've not got nearly enough mileage out of that. Maybe he'll come back.
The pull of Granit Xhaka is pretty strong, isn't it? You know, he just couldn't wait to get there with him.
Yeah, it's definitely that and not working for Xabi Alonso. Good luck to Teller. Anyway, how about this for a story to finish from the Sunderland Echo? Luke O'Neill helped save the life of a dog. This is directly from the article. Eyewitnesses reported that an elderly dog was swimming in the sea but ran into difficulties and had to be pulled out of the water by the dog's owner. Passers-by described a young man running over to help the woman owner, with O'Neill pumping the dog's chest until the pooch coughed up seawater and began to breathe again. Clarky, do you think this is why Sunderland have rewarded him with a new three-year contract?
Look, it's justified, isn't it? Yeah, give him that cash. It's what a hero. What a ledge Luke O'Neill is. We saw the documentary Sunderland Till I Die. Great character. I met him a few years ago. I tried to get him to become a full international for Singapore, because they'd heard he was eligible. They wanted me to do a big piece on him. So I went and scouted him when he was at Wickham, wrote a lovely piece, interviewed him. He was absolute diamond of a geezer. And off of the article, the Singapore national team manager was like, I've got to have this kid. Got in touch, reached out, but Luke gave it the custard pie. So yeah, it turned out, I think you had to take up Singaporean citizenship, which was slightly off-putting, I think, for Luke and his family. So it never happened. But yeah, I'm really chuffed for him. And that he's had such a good career, and And yeah, it doesn't surprise me. He's a real sort of real character. And look, fair play. I don't know whether I would know what to do in terms of resuscitating a dog. So and maybe he didn't know either. But well done for trying. And it's obviously paid off. I did read that he told the dog owner, Google it. Can you just Google this while I'm doing it, just to make sure that we're doing the right thing? So he's thinking on his feet. What a hero.
Animal's not my strong suit, but. And along with the obvious heroics, if we were to draw a shortlist of 10 championship players that would be capable of this type of duty, Luke 09 would be in it, right?
Oh, 100%.
Wouldn't he?
I think he'd be near the top.
So I read the article. Oh, yeah, Luke 09. That's just an average day for Luke 09, isn't it?
Luke 09, more like. Sorry. Well done, Luke. I mean, there's definitely a movie in that, I think, or at least a short TV series. That'll do for news. Next, we're going to get into the weekend's action, starting with the championship. Suffolking entertainment this weekend throughout the EFL, nowhere more so than at Portman Road, where Ipswich and Leeds shared 7 goals, with the visitors coming out on top in a 4-3 thriller to inflict Ipswich's first league defeat since January, helped by a debut goal from a new boy.
Sinisterra's into the penalty area onto his right foot. Curls the shot. Keeper's got it.
Yes!
And it's stabbed home, and Pirro has his first goal. The new man has got a goal on his debut for Leeds United. It was a gift, and he accepted it, and Leeds are further in front. Pirro's got it.
Adrian, you alluded to this earlier, but obviously it's a happy Farker because he's got a win, never mind that it came at Ipswich, and he's a former Norwich manager. But as you said, the fact that you've not only got Pirro on debut, Nonto, who wanted out, back in the team and on the score sheet, and Jorginho Rutter, who looked like he couldn't hit a barn door in the Premier League, finally getting his first goal. This is about as good as it gets for Leeds, isn't it?
It's like 4 new signings have just come into that team straight away. Obviously, Rutter was in the bomb squad, wasn't he? No one wanted to pick him. And I saw him. I saw his debut up at Accrington last season. I thought he looked really sharp, and he looked like he's a player with lots of ability. So it puzzled me a little bit that he was so far out of the first team. Well played, Farker, for sort of putting his arm around the shoulders of Nonto and Sinisterra, because they are going to be huge players at championship level. They're definitely good enough to run amok. And Joel Pirro, they've beaten their rivals to the signature of him, haven't they? I think they're all interested in Joel Pirro. So all of a sudden, Leeds look like contenders, don't they? And this was a great game, brilliant game. 37 shots in total, 16 shots on target. I mean, Ipswich had more than Leeds. They had 23 efforts on goal. There wasn't a lot wrong with Ipswich going forward. Wes Burns was terrific again. He was so good. Well, Sam Byron played left back against him, so he got injured midway through the first half. So then they brought on Cody Drammer, who was on loan last season at Luton. He's more of a right sider. Put him on the left back. He got tormented so much that he was off at half time. And then Shackleton comes on, and I think he got roasted by him as well. So Burns was maybe unlucky to be on the losing team. But yeah, it was good from Leeds, really good. Obviously, lovely individual goals. Rutter dribbled past a couple for his. Sinisterra, excellent. Looked a little bit Henry-esque with the goal that he scored, running in behind and just curling it nonchalantly into the corner. So yeah, there's youthfulness, there's hunger, there's ability, a lot of ability in this Leeds United side. And there's the wisdom of Daniel Farker to knit it all together. I think that after a slightly rocky start to the campaign, they're going to fly now, Leeds United. But they will need to improve in the fullback areas. Defensively, slight bit of fragility there on the left and right side. But once they sort that out, they should be okay.
7 goals there then, 6 at the Hawthorns. Middlesbrough's thorny start to the season continuing. They went down 4-2 to a West Brom side who are unbeaten in 3.
Sarmiento comes back to Peter. 6 minutes of time added on. Alex Moa into Sarmiento. He's in the penalty area.
Oh, what a goal!
A sizzling strike from
what
the South
a goal
American
from Sarmiento!
To seal 3 points to West Bromwich Albion.
All right, Sam, I'll leave it up to you. I always feel like you should start with the winners, but I'm not sure if they're the biggest story here or whether it's Middlesbrough and their woes, particularly looking at the goals they conceded. What's your thoughts here? Are you saying praise for West Brom for seeing them off, or more concerns for Carrick?
I'm not concerned for Carrick. I'm concerned about the squad right now and maybe how long it's going to take on the training ground to find a little bit of rhythm and how many matches it's going to take. But I think in time, they'll be absolutely fine. I think maybe we, I don't know if we were guilty of it, but I think probably nationally, people that follow this league were a little bit optimistic that Middlesbrough could replicate what they did last year. And I think we're just seeing the result, the product of a team simply losing their better players, and especially at the top end of the pitch, Ramsey, Akpom, Archer, Giles for his creation on the left-hand side. You take four players of that calibre out of any side and don't replace them adequately, then they're going to struggle. What I will say is Latte Lath looked really sharp at the weekend. The left-back angle, I know he's involved in one of the goals, but I think the fans are quite optimistic that these are two really good signings. Obviously, the profile that Middlesbrough are going down the route of going for, you know, young lads from different European leagues, probably with a good resale value. Silveira, I think, had his best game as well. He's passed up a few opportunities in the opening few games, which has, you know, obviously been a bit wasteful, but I thought he was really good here. So, and you could see from the demeanour of Michael Carrick after the game, you know, he wasn't too downbeat. So
is he ever done? He's so chilled out. Is he the most chilled out manager in the country? I mean, it strikes me that nothing will ever rile Michael Carrick. Do you know what I mean?
I'll tell you why though, Clarkie, right? Here you go. Borough, 13 shots they've conceded on their goal. And they've conceded 9 goals. And of their 16 shots, they've converted 3. So I think, and you know, the numbers, the attacking stats are actually far superior to them of West Brom at the weekend. West Brom, 21st shots per game, 17th shots on target, 19th for XG4. So I think, you know, if you're optimistic as a Borough fan and you follow the statistics, I think it could turn around for them, and it could turn around for them quite quickly. Although defensively, they're leaving a lot to be desired. So if there is anything to be done in the transfer window, I would suggest another centre half, maybe another fullback. And these results could start turning. But yeah, there were some really poor goals. The first one, Johnny Howson wasn't strong enough. The second one, a bit like the Oxford goals that you referred to earlier, Clarkie, John Swift just like ambling through the middle of the pitch. The third was an absolute mess, wasn't it, for Thomas Asante? So yeah, defensively, not good at all. Soft goals, but West Brom were clinical. And I don't think West Brom should be too far away. I think they've got a brilliant coach. I know they're a little bit limited in terms of what they can do transfer wise, but I think they've got good options in the forward positions. They've got Maginal, they've got Sarmiento who came on and scored, they've got Thomas Asante, obviously 2 tens the other day, in Swift and Wallace, and still see a lot of conversation about them needing more in the final third. I think that's a bit greedy. I think, you know, you've got DK to come back as well, and I think you should be able to work with that. I think defensively it's where West Brom, probably like Middlesbrough, might do a little bit of business before the end of the window, because they look a little bit short there. But they'll be strong from set pieces. They'll be well organised. They're magnificent at home. I think it's the most points at home either this calendar year or since Corbran took over.
So, since he took over last October, no team's won more championship points at home than West Brom. So, yeah, I mean, that's some stat.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
So with everything that's rumbled on, and we had the chap on, didn't we, last year, if memory serves me right, about the uncertainty at board level, you know, to keep hold of the manager, that was the most imperative thing. And yes, the squad hasn't changed much, but while he's there, they're going to have a chance. And it was a good win for them. Not perfect, but a good win, and not concerned about them or Middlesbrough is my long-winded answer to whatever you asked me 15 minutes ago, mate.
Yeah, and West Brom have got Huddersfield coming to the Hawthorns next weekend, so they'll fancy their chances of extending that excellent home run. So they're doing well, but Leicester are the only team in the Football League with a 100% record. They left it late to preserve that status, though. Academy grad Casey McAteer getting his second of the game, 6 minutes from time, to earn a 2-1 win. We can hear from him now talking to Leicester's in-house media post-match.
Yeah, this day, I remember this day for the rest of my life. You know, scoring from the club I've been at all my life, really. It can't put into words. I'm ecstatic at the moment. It's very hard to describe, but no, great, great, great feeling. We've had a great start to the season. So like the gaffer says before the game today, we need to keep building day by day, and living in the present and not thinking too far into the future, just taking game by game. And we did that today and got what we deserved.
Just like I did last week, Clarkie, with Mavadua, I feel like I'm early to the party here because I saw quite a lot of Casey McAteer for Leicester's under-21s. And there are some players, aren't there? All three of us watch a lot of PL2 football where you think, you're miles too good for this. And he looks like a good find for them. You know, they've made lots of signings, haven't they? But if they can dip into the academy and blend it, that always helps. And dominating here again.
Yeah, yeah. Look, with Casey McAteer, obviously, Yeah, he excelled at PL2, but he went out on loan to Forest Green and to Wimbledon last year and did all right, but didn't, you know, wasn't somebody we talked about on the podcast, was he? He wasn't someone that was scoring goals for fun and impacting matches week in, week out. Yet here he is with the Championship leaders, you know, seemingly very much part of the plans. This is what a new manager can do. It's brilliant for players. It's brilliant for young players when a managerial change occurs, because they come in with fresh eyes and they see things that maybe the other manager didn't want to see or couldn't be bothered to see. And yeah, fair play to McAteer. He's made an impact. That second goal was a real beauty. So well played to him. And it's a very new look, Leicester, isn't it? I like it. There was a tweet going around showing some highlights of their possession football in this game against Rotherham, just knocking the ball around for fun, toying with the opposition. And that is what they will do at times this season. And I think what we're already seeing, because they've scored a number of late goals already, what we're seeing is them wear teams down, grind them down, a little bit like Manchester City do, in terms of we're going to have so much of the ball, we're going to get you to chase. Because when you play, Sam will know this, when you play against a team that just pass and move for fun, it can drain you. It can drain your morale as well as your legs. And it feels like they're going to do that to a lot of teams this season, even if they're not, you know, carving out millions of chances. But the thing that excites me really most about Leicester City is that it's the sort of younger players coming to the fore in this setup, with Callum Doyle obviously being brilliant at left back at the moment, Dewsbury Hall magnificent, McAteer, you had Cassaday coming off the bench to improve the team. He came on for Ndidi, who's probably going to leave by the end of the week. He improved things. So yeah, the Foxes look different stylistically, but also in terms of personnel, but they look more of a team than they did last season. Things are coming together very, very nicely for them.
Yeah, just on the possession and the style of play point, 5 of their 7 goals in the last 30 minutes. So that fatigue may be setting in the opponent. 4 goals for, none conceded in the last 15 of games. So I think that's probably paying dividends, and effect from substitutes as well. Cassaday got one, didn't he? Dennis Pratt came on. I think Vardy's assisted coming off the bench. So the strength in depth as well when the opposition are tiring.
Yeah, and they're going to be able to rotate their squad throughout the course of this season, because they've got a massive squad in Championship level. So yeah, I think they look ominous, Leicester City. And I don't even think they're anywhere near what they're capable of yet either. Leicester City, there's more to come from them. By the way, in this game, Rotherham weren't bad. They didn't play poorly at all. I think they were really proud of their own performance. You know, they had a bit of the ball themselves. The centre-half partnership of Tyler Blackett and Cameron Humphrey stood up very well to the pressure, by and large. Cafu was good in midfield. You'll know about him, Matt, from his time at Forest. So yeah, Rotherham can take heart from the game, but yeah, Leicester march on.
Yeah, going to be interesting to see how Arvin Appiah gets on at Rotherham as well. Very, very highly rated former Forest youngsters. Career's dipped a bit. He's on loan from Almeria. They're still looking for their first win, the Millers. But Leicester, yes, it looks like it's going to be a fun season for them. You might say the same, Sam, about Norwich. What a tremendous start they've had. Their best in more than 20 years, in fact. The latest success, a 4-0 thumping of Huddersfield on their own patch. The Canaries unbeaten. They've scored 13 goals in their 4 games so far. And have you ever known a youngster make an impact like Jonathan Rowe? 5 in 5. He hadn't even started a game before this season. That's pretty incredible.
I can't believe you haven't said 5 in a row there, mate.
Sorry.
It's a tapping for you, my friend. No, it's amazing, isn't it? And I think we were all over him after the one game. So, yeah, to be talking about him still like a month in is incredible. But yeah, I think he's a big part of it. I honestly do. I think you could focus on all areas of the pitch and give him enormous plaudits. But I think the way that they're setting up under Wagner, I mean, they're much better away from home. They have been, you know, under him. 20 points under him since he came in, 16 at home. I think that's going to change because I think they're that good this season. So I wouldn't be deterred about what they're going to do at Carrow Road. But I think this is much more counter-attacking and brilliant in transition. And I think we saw that in evidence at Southampton. I think it's a big change from Daniel Farke. I thought there was some lovely football under him, clear identity, nice intricate stuff through the thirds. But this is very much, you know, hitting teams when there's nice wide open space to exploit. And Rowe is a massive part of that. Be interesting now with Sargent getting injured. I went on a different medium last week talking about the EFL and said that Josh Sargent could be an outside shout for top goal scorer at Norwich this year. So I've absolutely given him the kiss of death because it looks like he's going to be out a while. But I think it would show their intent if they go back into the market this week and maybe replace him if he is going to be out long term, because he's looked incredibly sharp. And I think it was going to be such an important season for him, having been at the club a while, acclimatizing, settling, and really hitting the ground running this year as he's done. So that's a big blow, but they're looking so ruthless. 3-0 up after 5 shots in this game against Huddersfield. And Huddersfield, again, weren't bad. Karoma hit the post. I think the goalkeeper made an outstanding save, Gunn from Ruffles. And Neil Warnock, scratching his head a little bit. He needs a striker, I think, desperately. They need a little bit more in the final third because they are very, very powder puff in front of the opponent's goal. But you would expect them to start picking up results soon. I don't think this was a true reflection of the game, but it'll be interesting to see if Neil Warnock not got the fight for it, but whether he's going to stick around, if this is going to be a relegation battle over the entire season. But yeah, couldn't be more impressed with Norwich. I think them and Birmingham, they are the surprise too, aren't they, right now? I don't think anyone could have foreseen these start.
Yeah. Is Neil Warnock going to do a Ben Foster? I wonder. He's one of those.
I was going to say, Clarky, just sack him and then bring him back in February.
Didn't he say, what was the quote he done last year? I loved it. Wasn't it I just want to come in for 7 games. It was saying ridiculously specific and 6 weeks or something. I loved it.
It's not the first 7, right? It's got to be towards the end of the season.
Yeah, I only want to work 6 weeks or so. It was glorious. I loved it.
In terms of any other business in the Championship, we mentioned Birmingham there. Adrian, it was a very happy end to their game, particularly for the former Exeter loanee who got the winner against Plymouth.
Yeah, Jay Stansfield. So, someone that we talked a lot about last season during his loan spell at Exeter from Fulham. He's a real wholehearted player, a really talented player. And he's been brought in at Birmingham, who needed a striker to sort of compete with Hogan and Jukovic. And he's made the instant impact. But of all teams, he scored a winning goal at St Andrews on his debut, right at the death, against Plymouth Argyle, Exeter's arch enemy. So well played to him. Because I am led to believe that some of the songs were pretty unpleasant that he was having to hear during the game. But he had the last laugh. So well done to Jay Stansfield.
Anything else stand out to you, Sam, from the Championship this weekend?
Oh, Jack Colback's rasping 22-yard daisy cutter. No, not really. Millwall, I think, Matt, to be honest, another Dean Holden down the road. Gary Rowett getting some unbelievable flack considering we're 5 games into the season and where they finished last year, where they finished the previous season. So this was a massive win for him against his former club, Stoke. And I understand some of the criticism. I'm over there a lot, obviously at the Den, and they want a specific type of football up and at them, and invariably 2 strikers on the pitch. And it's not really what Gary Rowett's been in terms of his managerial setup prior to getting to Millwall. And there, they're solid, they're hard to beat, and they've been a really good Championship side over the last few seasons. But made a couple of telling changes, I thought, for this game. He went the 2 up, Bradshaw and Nisbet. Nisbet gets his first goal. You got Norton Cuffey on one side, Joe Bryan on the other side. And I think that will add something. I don't know what you think, Clarkey, but I think if you're playing a back 3, especially at home, your wing-backs have got to contribute going forward. When I say contribute, they've got to be getting goals and assists. Otherwise, you're in your back 5 and you're not getting that productivity from your wide boy. So I think the profile of these two guys, I know Norton Cuffey didn't maybe contribute loads of goals and assists at Coventry, but I think he's probably better than what Millwall have had. And Joe Bryan on the left-hand side, I still think, is a really good signing. So I think if they can kick on, Millwall could... can forget about any trouble.
That was the Championship. We'll head to League One next. Sam's old club Exeter saw off Reading at St James's Park, and he'd like to talk about it. It'd be churlish to deny him that opportunity, given the way the Grecians won it. Here's the goal that got the job done, then the analysis.
Long throw by Partridge. It's a great long throw.
All right. Right then, Sam, last week, Cambridge with the surprise package of League One. I checked the table, all of a sudden they're ninth. So are Exeter taking that moniker now?
I think it's been a reasonably good start from Reading, considering all the pre-season concern. And they rallied in this game. Exeter, for half an hour, 45 minutes maybe, I'm seeing supporters saying this is one of the best performances in recent memory at St James's Park. They were absolutely scintillating. And this is taken me by surprise. I thought Gary Caldwell could be one of the first managers to come under a little bit of pressure and could be one of the teams that could be down the lower echelons of the division. So he's done incredibly well. Defensively, they're looking brilliantly. I think it's the second best defensive record. I think them and Reading actually are right up there in terms of expected goals against. So they both started in quite stingy fashion. It's Hartridge, Sweeney and Ameson. The back three are getting a lot of plaudits, playing the back three with wing-backs, but there's loads of rotation. The two wing-backs tucking in field to counter what Reading had in the centre of the pitch. So the style of play, getting loads of plaudits, Gary Caldwell, and I didn't really see that from him last year. Great start to the season. I thought it was important to mention them after that win at Carlisle last week. And really good display here. The one somber note out of the club, I suppose, is I think Sam Nombe is off or has already gone to maybe Rotherham, I think I saw yesterday. So he wasn't in the team at the weekend. So that just emphasises how good a result it was. Jack Aitchison led the line. So essentially playing without an out-and-out forward and getting another really good victory, another good 3 points against the Reading side, who I think will be okay this season. I've seen enough from them to suggest they could pull themselves away from any kind of trouble. And Harley Dean, in the wake of this defeat, again, emphasised how good a performance this was from Exeter. Said by far and away the best team they'd played, the most sophisticated football. So I think that shows you that Gary Caldwell has a really, really good summer.
All right, we'll keep an eye on them as the campaign rolls on. Elsewhere in League One, Peterborough versus Derby felt like a game that was almost guaranteed goals. It duly obliged with six of them, four in the away team's column. I can't quite work Derby out this season, Clarkie, because they tend to be really good away from home and really poor at Pride Park. And that was the case again here, helped by Martin Waghorn, of course. We'll put him in the veteran status now, but he knows where the onion bag is in League One.
He does. Yeah, look, Martin Waghorn was one of seven, or is one of seven 30-somethings that have started so far this season for Derby. They've got a lot of senior citizens, but he's delivered here. He showed his class and ultimately made the difference in a good game. And I think Peterborough United are going to be involved in a lot of good games this season. They're very adventurous. They want to be on the front foot attacking. They want to keep the ball and charge at opponents, but they do leave themselves a little bit open for things to become a little bit of a basketball match. And that was kind of how it was for periods of this one. I think it was simply a case of Derby being more clinical, and Waghorn tucked away some pretty difficult chances, actually. It was an excellent individual performance from him. Really enjoyed the last one where he just curled it into the far top corner. So yeah, look, Derby, this might be the type of performance and the type of result to get their season going. Now, I've got a little bit of info here. A friend of mine was at the Derbyshire Tennis Open at the weekend watching his son play tennis, and apparently Martin Waghorn's son won two titles at the Derbyshire Tennis Open. So what a day for the Wag Army. Hey, unbelievable. Dad gets a hat trick. He wins a couple of titles on the court. So happy days. I should imagine they all got a takeaway to celebrate on Saturday night in the Waghorn house. So yeah, well done to them. What they've done, by the way, Paul Warren, is brought in a couple of younger players. Tyrese John-Jules from Arsenal, who I know a bit about. He's had loads of injury problems, but he is a really good player. Him and Tyrese Fauna from Forest. So, so he's bringing in some younger legs. That's what's needed. And I think he deserves a little bit of credit here as well, Warren. He started with a back five. It was a 3-5-2. Saw it wasn't really working early on. Flipped it around, shuffled it to make it more of a 4-4-2. He put Rooney more at right back than at right centre back. Brought back Forsyth a touch, and it worked. And they were dynamite going forward here, Derby. So yeah, two good teams. I think they'll both be in and around the playoffs.
A bit like Luke 09, Martin Waghorn looks like a tennis player. Strange gait, left-handed. know what I mean?
I know what you're saying. Yeah, I can see him in his white. I think I can see him with a tightish white short. Yeah, servant volley. I'd have him down as a servant volley merchant.
I'd have Waghorn down as a dog rescuer. I mean, partly because he's got Wag in his name, I suppose, but he looks like that sort. Do you know any other EFL footballers who've rescued an animal? Tweet us at EFL What There. I'd love to do a whole show on that. It'll always be the dream. Sam, we were speaking about Charlton earlier and they got beaten by Oxford, but you wanted to give some love to Oxford, which is not a sentence I ever thought I'd say, to be honest, Swindon Town Hall of Famer.
They've had a really good start. I think that Liam Manning's been backed, actually. I think they're paying some decent money this year. I think that's that. I'm going to caveat it with that, have a little low dig, because I think they're having a bit of a go this year. But this was another really good victory. Stephen Negru, I hope I've said that right, is getting stellar reviews. They got him from Shelbourne in Ireland, outstanding at the back. McGuane looks like the player that they had initially when he joined, kind of box-to-box midfield role, playing really, really well. And obviously Tyler Goodrum, who I'd seen actually in a few cup competitions the last few years at the Kassam, and he looked like a really talented young player, but obviously not getting a great deal of game time under Carl Robinson, invariably off the bench. And he's becoming, you know, a huge player for them. And I thought his goal, the first goal, was probably the goal of the weekend. Yes, it was partly down to Charlton backing off, but the strike after the run was superb. Kissed the underside of the bar, looked absolutely glorious, flew into the net. So, yeah, there sounds like there's a bit of interest in him already, which will not be what the Oxford fan want. But great start to the season for them. And seven players in the team against Charlton that were Oxford at the back end of last season. So I think it just emphasises what Liam Manning has done in a short space of time. He's polished up a group of players that were hugely underachieving under the previous regime. So, yeah, really good start for them. Rodriguez, the lad they captured from Notts County as well, he's settled into life really, really well as well. So, yeah, optimistic that this could be their year.
So they've gone for it in terms of recruitment, but he's not just chucking them all into the team at once, basically. He's sort of just beefing up the squad. But yeah, just penny for Carl Robinson's thoughts, really, because I remember he was sort of locking horns with the ownership there for ages, wasn't he? Looking for a bit more backing, looking for some, a bit of freshening up and whatnot, but it didn't get it. So interesting. But yeah, they do look good. Can I just throw out a couple of sort of negatives, you know what I'm like, Matt. Hang your head in shame, John Mellish. I think one of the worst throw-ins I think I've ever seen. Crossed the face of his own 18-yard box to a goalkeeper that had come in for Thomas Holy for Carlisle. So that was a little bit controversial in itself. And it was a hospital throw-in, and the keeper's touch was shocking, and he ends up giving a penalty away. So that was a hang your head in shame moment. And also Josh Earle at Fleetwood, that was a proper stamp, caught on camera. Luckily the assistant referee saw it, but yeah, I winced when I saw that, because that had a lot of spite in it. That wasn't a Lauren James, just a little tread on someone. That was a proper spiteful stamp. And do you know what? I think that incidents like that should carry a heavier punishment. And I hope that maybe a 3-game ban turns into something longer.
All right, we'll see on that one. All right, that was League One. We'll head into League Two next. Arguably, I would say, Adrian, the shock of the day in the Football League game at Priestfield. Previously perfect Gillingham lost 3-0 to a Colchester side who'd lost all three league games before Saturday. Neil Harris, quite sanguine after this. He said that his team played okay. It was just the second half of the second half that it all went wrong for them, basically, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. I don't think Gillingham were terrible. They just capitulated a little bit in the final half an hour. I think that Ben Garner, this is one of those games where he has to take a lot of credit. So he set his team up very well. They sat in. We know that he wants to have possession. We know that he's a guy that loves the short passing through the thirds. And that will come, I think, in time. But he also realises the limitations of his group at the moment. And he knew that he had to go to Gillingham and keep it tight and look to play on the break. So they did that, frustrated Gillingham. And then he unleashed some subs. I think he brought on three substitutes. They were all heavily involved in the goals. I think two of them scored. And there were some lovely goals as well. Samson Tavid, what a great touch and piece of composure from him inside the box to get the second goal. First one was from a scrappy corner. And then the last goal from the substitute, Brad Ihonvian. I don't know how to say his name. Ihonvian, I'm going to go with. Yeah, Brad. He runs through. He looks a mile offside, I've got to be honest. But once he gets there, you know, this is a kid that's barely played any first team football. The little dink chip over the goalkeeper was glorious. And that, for me, was a contender for goal of the weekend as well. So, yeah, again, he's obviously had a good preseason. He's impressed the manager and he's got his rewards there. 11 players aged 21 or under have played for Colchester United already this season. That's brilliant, isn't it? That's so good. That's so refreshing. So lots of 18, 19, 20, 21-year-olds getting their chance in the EFL. And results and performances might be a little bit up and down, but days like this, we can go to the league leaders and grind out a brilliant 3-0 away win. That, you know, that can help kick you on as a young player massively. So, yeah, well done, Garner. Well done, Colchester United. Gillingham, just they don't need to worry too much. But the lack of goals is a mild concern because up until then, they'd won every game 1-0, hadn't they? So they need a bit more firepower, perhaps.
See if they make any moves this week too. Also in League Two, Mansfield twice came from behind to snatch a 3-2 win against Stockport in Nottinghamshire. Boss Nigel Clough, not a man who lets happiness go to his voice. Here he is discussing the win and having a pop at midfielder Lewis Reed.
Just thrilled with the 3 points. You know, to go one down, then 2-1 down. Very, very disappointed with the manner in which we conceded the goals. But very pleased and proud with the way we responded in the second half. It was much more like us. First half, we looked a little bit off it, a little bit lethargic and epitomised by Lewis Reed, who gave the ball away more in 45 minutes than he has done, I think, in the previous five games.
Sam, this one was absolutely perfect for whoever was doing the voiceover on the EFL show. Kickoff delayed because of a torrential downpour pre-match, and then it rained goals when the game got started.
It did, yeah. It was.
You can see why I've never been booked for that show, can't you?
I mean, yeah, okay,
the response to that got
no, us lukewarm. Perfect, Matt. Yeah, you got a soft spot for Mansfield, haven't you? And they've started well, mate. They've started really well. Unbeaten, 3 draws from 5. And I think we're probably all unified in being surprised at Stockport's slow start once more. They've only had one win against Barrow. This is normally the part of the show where you refer to Google when I'm talking, Matt, but I haven't got it in front of me. Sorry, I was a bit pushed for time this morning. But Dave Challoner said something which just really struck a chord with me. It was something like Mansfield have got a back four and then they all just go everywhere, the rest of the team. Or I have no idea what they're doing other than what happens in their defensive shape. So, and that's kind of my critique on Mansfield over the last 3-4 seasons. And this performance, this setup of the team, I think just emphasised Nigel Clough's style of management above any other game. He had Jordan Barry at centre-half. And apologies to Mansfield fans if this has happened before this season, but he ended the game with Jordan Barry at centre-half, who's played centre-forward for a large portion of his career. And Lucas Aiken, yeah, really versatile player. He was at right-back at the end. And that change, actually, it was Will Swan who came on for George Williams, and Lucas Aikens went and reverted to fullback, and that actually turned the game in their favour. So it's pretty mad when you look at some of the lads that he kind of shoehorns into different positions. But I think it's also a strength of Nigel Clough, and I think we've consistently said that. George Maris was a standout player for them here. Keeler Dunn, 2 goals. He's got 5 goals and an assist for the season. 16 goal involvements he got last year for Burton and Mansfield combined. So he's maturing into a real reliable creator and goal scorer for Mansfield. And yeah, a really good start for them. Stockport, few reasons. I think letting centre-backs go in the summer. And, you know, we looked at that back three, the first couple of games of the season. They had full-backs playing the outside roles. He's got defenders in there now. Ethan Pye is a young lad, inexperienced. Ryan Johnson and Joe Lewis both allowed to leave the club in the summer. So they seem undercooked defensively. No real Kyle Wotton replacement at the moment, which seems to be problematic. And the Nick Powell experiment, it's probably the wrong word, the Nick Powell signing has not worked out to this point. So loads of work for Stockport to do. They were okay actually for a half here, so I'm still optimistic it should turn around, and probably two teams that I would hazard a bet will be up in the top 7, top 8 end of the season.
Yeah, it was interesting to hear Sam talking about the sort of gung-ho attacking mentality of Nigel Clough, just getting so many attack-minded players onto the pitch. Well, here's a stat that that basically typifies that. Mansfield have had 87 shots in open play so far. Not bad going. It's 27 more than the next team, who is Swindon Town. That's incredible. 87 shots in open play already, 27 more than anybody else. So, yeah, getting a season ticket at Field Mill is probably a good shout.
And you wouldn't hang your hat on any of those players getting probably over 15 goals, would you? So, again, like if he was jam-packed, stocked with like four strikers, you could get your nut around it. But centre-halves having 20 shots a game, it's mad.
We mentioned Swindon there. You might have seen this, listener, about this tremendous thing that happened at the weekend. They beat Crawley 6-0. Jake Young got four of the goals. It was particularly good for Chris Maisie and his dad, Dale. When it was Dale's 50th birthday, they had a bet on their beloved Swindon to win 5-0 at 100-1. That happened. They beat Crewe. So this weekend, it was Dale's 60th. This time they put 20 quid on Swindon to win 6-0 against Crawley, 200-1. It came in, the final goal came in the 99th minute, £4,020 better off they are. Sam, they won 4-0 on his 40th, right? And you were involved in that game against Notts County. What was that, August 2003?
Yeah, so yeah, it would have tallied up that as well. Yeah, I think a supporter pointed that out that, yeah, 20 years ago, it was 4-0 against Notts County. And I did actually, if I get time, I'll send you the link, because I scored the worst ever goal in the history of professional football, where actually I fell over. Tommy Mooney like squared it to me on the line and I fell over. I was playing like really poorly before that game and I had a really bad game. We won 4-0 and I like fell over on the line. And I think the defender kicked it in, but just like, it's a weird illusion where it actually looks like I've towed it in. So I got the goal, but it was the worst goal of my career. Just panicked when the ball got put to me. But yeah, he could have been quids in then as well. So I was keeping across this game. I think I was just like flicking around on my mobile at the weekend. And I don't know if it came so late or it had been such a flurry of goals. There was no the acknowledgement to say that it was 6-0. And then when I was looking on various mediums at the end of the game, it still said 5-0. So it was really confusing. They got battered so much, Crawley, that someone somewhere lost count of the score is basically what I'm trying to say, which is glorious in defeat.
90+9, the winner. Clarkie, once we get the footage of that terrible goal that Sam scored, you'll be able to tell me whether that was a more underwhelming finish than Troy Deeney's first of his Forest Green career in their draw at Wimbledon.
That was up there, wasn't it? That was not. I mean, it's a nice little lob, I suppose, but it was a bit of an ugly way that he got the ball into the goal. I mean, he looked offside. I tried to pause it to see, because he looked offside to me. But yeah, he's off and running. That was a good result, actually, for Forest Green. I don't think any of us fancied them to go to inform Wimbledon and get a point. A couple of things that really struck me across the weekend, particularly in League Two, short corner goals. Everywhere you looked, there was a goal scored from a short corner routine. So they're very much in vogue. George Thompson of Harrogate, James Ward-Prowse impression, absolutely stunning free kick, curled over the wall into the top corner. Brilliant from him. And Abu Issa as well for Grimsby. I mean, he spanked another one in from 25 yards. He is having a phenomenal start to this season. So, yeah, few little observations around League Two.
All right, the scouting report will return next week. But because we're having a long show today, we're going to park it and look at some of the weekend's games next instead. One preview per division. In the Championship, it's one of those, is this a derby? Derbies. It certainly is to the supporters of the cities of Swansea and Bristol. It's a big game as well, this, Clarkie, for both sides. It feels like one where you can kind of kickstart your season. Swansea looking for a first league win under Michael Duff, only one win for the Robins themselves.
Yeah, that's how I feel about it as well. Is it the seven-side derby or is that Cardiff? I can't remember. I think that's Cardiff v Bristol City, isn't it? Yeah, Swansea to Bristol is... it's quite far. I don't think we can really call this a derby. Yeah, look, for both teams, it's sort of life after their main man, isn't it? Life after Joel Perreault for Swansea, life after Alex Scott for Bristol City. They're sort of readjusting. Swansea are very much a work in progress, aren't they? I think that they've got a lot of new players. Wing-backs are really important for a Michael Duff team, and he's got two young boys in there, relatively young. Josh Key, who was at Exeter, he's had a good start, I think. Harrison Ashby on the other side on loan. He scored at the weekend at Preston. Charlie Patino in midfield, he's thriving by all accounts. So even though results haven't been brilliant, they're a team in development. And they've been pretty tight, actually, defensively. They've not given much away, Swansea. So yeah, this is a big game for them. They kind of need to win. But I don't think it'll be easy against a Bristol City team that, I don't know what Sam thinks, but probably have had a slightly stronger start than the Swans. I think Bristol City played pretty well up at Hull on Friday night.
Yeah, they've started the season much better away from home, haven't they? And I think, Ashton Gate has been a little bit problematic over a period of time. They got more points at home last season, but I don't think it was by much. Yeah, seven draws, seven defeats last year at home. So certainly started this season better away. And I think that's just a product of them being a better counter-attacking team. I don't think they probably, different styles to Millwall, but I don't think they probably have the controllers of possession, the people that can, you know, thread the eye of the needle passes when there's a deep lying defence or when a team's away from home set in. So I think playing on the road just seems to really suit Bristol City. They can get after teams. There's a youthfulness to the front line with Sykes and Bell on the other side, flanking Naki Wells. So yeah, I think I make them probably slight favourites for this. I've been slightly underwhelmed by Swansea, teething problems as Clarkey says, but I look at the lineup from the weekend, lost a lot of leaders, lack of experience in that lineup. Very, very young. And I thought it was an interesting appointment given where Michael Duff, not where he's been, but what he'd done in terms of the style at his previous club's been really successful. But I was surprised. It was one that jumped off the page to me when he was appointed here. So I hope it's going to work out, and he needs that first win, I think, to just give a little bit of belief to the natives.
Tight game, this one. Not loads of goals. That's what I'd go with.
Well, they played four times last season.
17 goals.
All right. Sam, we learned last week that you like incorrectly ascribing 1-1 draws to Bristol City. How many of the previous 8 meetings between these teams have finished that way?
4.
Oh, close. It was 3. More than Bristol City versus whoever it
Just
was last
jumped
week.
Jumped the gun then, didn't I?
League One, there's Lancashire Derby. 2 teams looking to bounce back to the Championship as Blackpool host Wigan. Blackpool, Sam, their problems seem fairly obvious to me. They haven't scored a league goal in any of their 4 games since opening day. They brought in Jordan Rhodes to try and help them with that. I am staggered to learn that he's only 33. I thought he was older than me.
Yeah, he's been around forever, hasn't he? Remembering him as a young kid, I think it was even pre-apprentice that he was coming into the training ground at Ipswich. His old man was the goalkeeping coach, Andy Rhodes. So yeah, I've known Jordan to have a little chat to for a long time. Been an unbelievable player for Huddersfield over his 2 spells. Didn't he get those goals in the playoff semi, if memory serves me right, in the last couple of seasons against Luton, when, yeah, he's clearly his best days are probably behind him now in terms of Championship level, but he still come up with some big goals for Huddersfield. And it is interesting that Neil Warnock's allowed him to leave, really. He's gone with everyone's best wishes, as you would expect, because he's such a ledge. But interesting when they're so short of goals, so short of front options, that he's been allowed to leave. But he should strengthen Blackpool. I think they're kind of wrestling with a bit of a different shape. Neil Critchley was kind of a 4-4-2, 4-3-3 man in his first spell at Blackpool. They're playing a bit more of a 3-5-2 at the moment. Not been that consistent in that. But yeah, it's been a struggle for them. And you would make Wigan favourites considering the way they've started the season and that they were having to play with 10 men for such a large period the other day, and actually were really good to begin with here. And the game obviously changed on that red card. And yeah, said it before, great looking front four, Wigan. McGuinness can't even get in at the moment. McManaman's come into that front four as well. Obviously an old teammate, Sean Maloney. So I would probably favour an away victory here.
You thinking the same, Clarkey?
Yeah, purely on the basis that Blackpool just aren't scoring. They've been hard to break down, of course. But yeah, no, I think that front four is excellent. Obviously, Humphreys, Lang and McManaman in behind Charlie Wyke. What interests me is the youth that Maloney's brought into the team this year. Got the goalkeeper, Sam Tickle, great name. Only 21 years of age. So that's quite unusual in itself. But central midfield, you've got Matt Smith, I think used to be at Arsenal, in alongside a kid called Adeko, you know, who's 20 himself. So this, and the guy that got sent off at the weekend, Charlie Hughes, only 19. It was a bit of a poor piece of defending. He sort of lost his bearings a little bit and made that professional foul to get the red card. But yeah, in key areas, behind that front four, which is pretty experienced. It's actually got a lot of youngsters, Wigan. So there might be some up and down moments. They might, you know, not be the most solid of sides this year, but I think they're going to be good to watch. And yeah, I think there'll be slight favourites here.
Yeah, you wouldn't think it would be a draw based on history. These two haven't drawn a league game since 2003. That's 14 league meetings subsequently. Another game, which won't require much travel for the away team, goes down in League Two, where Morecambe hosts Salford. Interesting looking at the table, Clarkey. Near identical records for these two. Both 7 points from five games. Salford's goal difference one better. But I thought Morecambe were going to struggle and Salford were going to fly this season. Might not be the case, judging by the first five games.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I've got to say about this game. Both on 7 points, but Morecambe are much, much happier than Salford, I would imagine. Salford, I mean, and this is young v old. So this could be one of those where the young legs thrive and they tear Salford apart, or it could be that they get old manned by the sort of experienced Salford side that can sort of use their nous and experience to bully them a bit. Incredible. We talk about front fours, right? This is Morecambe's front four. Mellon, 19. Mayer, 18. McKiernan, 21. And Bloxham, 19. In midfield behind them, Songo's in his 30s, alongside King, who's 20. So that's pretty much, it's almost a youth team. So yeah, but it's exciting, isn't it, for Morecambe supporters, I would imagine, and for all the lads involved to be getting this experience. And this is a game that they'll fancy, because Salford, with the reputation that they've got, they're always there to be shot at, aren't they?
About time they had a new manager as well, isn't it, Sam? Neil Wood will be looking over his shoulder.
Yeah, I would imagine so. It's just such a head-scratcher, isn't it? Even this start to the season. You look at the names on the team sheet, especially going forward. I think it's a pretty solid outfit all round now. You know, the fullbacks are good. Really like those front players. You've got Bolton, McElhenney, Hendry, midfield, Mallon, good player. And what makes this interesting for me is that Morecambe's hopes of survival, their hopes of staying up, you know, in previous seasons, all been based around their home form. 32 of their 44 points last season come at home, yet they're playing against Salford, who were one of the masters on the road last year. Second best tally in the league, 40 points away from home, Salford took. So it'd be an interesting clash. If Morecambe are going to be successful, they need to pick up some wins in this type of game at home. Where are the goals going to come from? Five in their five games so far. No, Mellon got a couple of them. I think they were his first goals in the Football League the other day, but some pressure in it on a young kid on loan in the league for the first time to get enough goals to garner you points and get you into a stable position in the league. So I think it's going to be a struggle for Morecambe for the reasons that Clarkey said. Salford, they've got to do it this year, haven't they? They have to. I think they've got good enough players to definitely have a push at those automatic positions.
All right, we'll see how they get on this weekend. That is just about it for this week's pod. But of course, I've got a tweet of the week for the boys to run the rule over. I've picked Aaron Ramsey, because he's very, very famous in Championship terms. This is after Cardiff got a vital win against Sheffield Wednesday at the weekend. Ramsey said, "Doesn't matter how, sometimes needed that today. Stuck with us right until the end to get all three." Applause emoji. "Enjoy your weekend, Bluebirds." Bluebird emoji, blue heart emoji at Cardiff City FC. Sam, you know that I'm not a fan of "enjoy your weekend," but I think if you are a Cardiff legend and you use a bird emoji, but the bird is red, that's got to be a booking, hasn't it? I mean, maybe there isn't a bluebird emoji. I didn't check, but he must have paused over hitting send on that, knowing how incendiary red has been for Cardiff supporters in the not too distant past.
On my Twitter feed, X feed, the bird's grey.
Wow. Okay. Well, I'm looking on my laptop. What are you using?
My iPhone.
Definitely grey, Matt.
Whoa.
Definitely grey.
Amazing.
It's grey blue. I'd even go as far to say it's a shade of blue.
Right, well, I'm just taking a picture and putting this on our group chat. I'm really sorry about this, listener, but you know, we've got to get this right.
Shall I critique it while you're looking, Matt?
I think
this shows a degree of humbleness, if that's a word. You know, for such
humility
for such a big hitter who's done so much in his career. That's obviously lifted copious amounts of League Cups or whatever he got at Arsenal, FA Cups.
hang on, mate.
yeah, I think it shows a little bit of humility. This, I haven't got too much problem with it. Like the Bluebirds, haven't got a problem with "enjoy your weekend." So probably a little bit unnecessary, the footage of him just controlling the ball in front of George Byers. The referee's got a particularly nice stance behind him. That's a little bit unnecessary, but haven't got a problem with that. I think that's Aaron getting down with the fans, isn't it?
He obviously didn't know, Clark. He's done what you have. I've just brought it up on my phone, and it's a grey bird. Not only that, it's only the head of the bird. I've just put the picture on the group chat of the one that came up on my laptop, and that is very much a whole bird, and it's red. I mean, Elon Musk comes in for a lot of flack. Now he can add Aaron Ramsey to the list of people that he's annoyed.
Yeah, it's a bit of a stitch-up, really, because, yeah, it's definitely blue for me. I looked at the replies. It was a sort of tweet that's fishing for a little bit of love, isn't it?
Yeah.
And he wouldn't have been disappointed, Aaron. Got to say, I don't know him at all, but from what I know of him, he's a good lad. He's a very normal kind of bloke. A little bit like Gareth Bale, not got that ego. Something about Welsh footballers that they stay pretty grounded. And I think Rambo's one of them. He's a decent person.
All right, that's Aaron Ramsey's Twitter. What about our social media, Adrian?
Yeah, at WhatTheEFL on Instagram and TikTok. Twitter is at EFL WhatThe, just back to front. But yeah, please do follow us. You'll get videos of us in action. Might get the odd bonus vid when we go to games and stuff. And it just, yeah, if you want to share the links on social media, tell your buddies about it. That would be a real help. But I've got to say, the figures this season, the listening figures are awesome. So massive thanks to everybody new that's on board. And yeah, I hope you stick with us.
Yeah, and thank you too to everybody who's left us a nice review on your podcast platform of choice. We had a couple go up on Spotify this week. We really appreciate that. It helps other people find the podcast. Before we go, a final reminder of the offer from our friends at QuinBet. They've enhanced their UK welcome offer. You can now get a free bet worth up to £35. It is for new customers that sign up only. You can check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions or use the link provided in the description of this podcast. It's 18 plus AMRA. Remember, always gamble responsibly. We shall be back in our regular Monday time slot next week. Enjoy the football. Until then, hope you get a cup set if you're off to an EFL Cup tie this week. We will maybe mention some of those. We'll talk about the transfer window closing as well and all the big action coming up this weekend. Join us next week then if you can. For now, though, it's goodbye.